Hey, Mighty Warrior. Whenever I travel across the country speaking and teaching at men's conferences, I'm often asked, Joe, what do you do for a living? And I usually respond by saying, I simply help Christian men win. I tell them that I provide them with a proven five-step plan that's guaranteed to help any Christian man succeed in the areas that matter most to him as a man, like loving God, being the hero of his home, being a champion at work, protecting and providing for his family, and leaving a legacy of faith for his children and his grandchildren. And I tell them that the men who come through our organization walk away better equipped and more confident to win in the battles that they fight every day as men. Now you can imagine the response I usually get is, what is that proven five-step plan? And I tell them we provide a free training on our website. All they have to do is go to rmcfree.com to gain access to it. That's it. So if you like to find out the five critical things that every Christian man needs to succeed, guaranteed, then just go over to rmcfree.com to get the training. That's rmcfree.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Guys, today we have with us Rasul Berry. Rasul Berry is the teaching and online pastor at The Bridge Church in Brooklyn, New York. And Rasul graduated from the University of Pennsylvania with a degree in Africana Studies and Sociology. Rasul also served with CREW for 20 years, which you guys may be familiar with, specifically with the Embark Network. And that's the division of CREW focused on millennials and Gen Z. His latest project is In Pursuit of Jesus. It's a travel documentary series in collaboration with Our Daily Bread Ministries. And guys, we asked Rasul to come on the Real Men Connect podcast today to talk to us not only about his travel documentary, but also how we can reach the next generation for Christ and the success he's had doing it. So please, Warrior Nation, help me in welcoming my guest, Pastor Rasul Berry, the Real Men Connect podcast. Welcome to the show, Rasul.
Man, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for making time out of your schedule to be here. And, you know, I don't know how much you knew about me before you came on, Rasul, but my background is in education. So I have a heart. I spent over 24 years in education, teaching at the elementary, high school, as well as the college level. And so before I came into men's ministry, I still have a heart for our young people, but now I'm a generation removed. And so I'm always looking for insights on how we can reach this next generation. My daughter, she's just graduated from high school. She'll be turning 18 next month by the time this podcast comes out. And so I'm excited not only about you sharing with us from the standpoint of being ministry leaders, but as being parents, especially dads out there who are listening to this podcast. So I can't wait to hear and get some of your insight. But Rasul, before we begin, we always ask our guests when they come on to share with us their favorite Bible verse from scripture that gives them inspiration from the Word of God. It could be a life verse. It could be just your anchor verse for this season in your life. But what's yours, man?
Yeah, I got an Old Testament one and a New Testament, but you asked for one. So I think for this season, since you said that like that, it's been Micah 6:8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly before your God. And I just think with all that's going on in the world, you know, between George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, the do justice piece has been something that I've been really a champion of, but also to love kindness, that aspect of we can't lose sight of the fact that God tells us to love our neighbor as ourself. And then walking humbly before God is the thing that is going to be the anchor that holds the other two, that only makes the other two possible. The other two are impossible if we don't have that.
You know, and I love that scripture. We rarely have anybody quote that particular verse on our show. So I'm always excited when I hear somebody brings a new verse to mind and give us something new to think about. You know, Russell, I was telling you before that we've been doing the podcast now. I forgot what year we're in. I guess about maybe the fourth year. And we've grown a huge platform and got a lot of listeners, but we're now shifting to putting it on YouTube. And so you're one of the new guys who we're going to be showing on YouTube. And it's funny because they never get to really see our guests, but now they'll be able to see this. But those who are listening right now, they can't see you. And I mentioned in your bio that you're a pastor. Now you look like you're 12. If you don't mind, I hate to put you on the spot, man. Tell them how old are you?
I'm 42.
Okay. Dude, you look great for your age, man. I'm telling you, you look great. I need to be drinking whatever you drink it, but you look great. But the thing is, and I'm sure that has to be an appeal that allows you to be able to reach young people, but we know that's not just it. That's not just it. But speaking of your age, I want you to give us your story. Give us a little bit of background about you and what got you so interested. I know what got me to education, but what got you working with this particular population?
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in Philly. My parents were actually in the Nation of Islam when I was born. That's where my name Rasul comes from. It's Arabic, means messenger. They broke up when I was two because my father was kind of in the streets hustling. He was murdered when I was six. And those events all had shaped my life in many different ways. Became in earnest a single parent home, but with much extended family and love. It was one of those scenarios because we ate good. I didn't even know we were poor, but that was about, you know, the only amenity that we had access to on a regular, but that really shaped me. And I think especially, that aspect of looking for a father, what did it mean to be a man? Was something that was haunted me, and I pursued and I saw and just tried to think through in many different ways. And I think a pivotal moment, there were two pivotal moments. One was reading the autobiography of Malcolm X in 10th grade, and reading that book really caused me to realize that I was here for a purpose. It was like just seeing the level of intelligence and the insight and the activism of this man caused me to realize, okay, there's more to life than just video games and girls and whatever else was going on in my world. And then the second was meeting Jesus Christ as my Savior and Lord, which happened essentially my freshman year in college. I heard that y'all keep it real here, so I'll give you the
always version.
So essentially what happened was my senior year in high school, two girls liked me at the same time. That was very unusual for me because I had no game. And so I ended up trying to be with both at the same time. Got caught because, like I said, I didn't have no game. And I remember what the girl said to me. She said, "You're no better than other guys. In fact, you're worse because you think you're better than them."
Wow.
Good and goodness. That was Ouch. What, whew, yeah, it was like God took a rock and threw it through this distorted mirror, like of my self-image, and caused me to realize that just because I got good grades, just because I didn't smoke weed and drink like the other guys in my class did, that didn't make me a better person than them. I had my own vices, my own journey, even if those were more, I was more of accommodating to people's expectations. And so that sent me I got depressed. I was like, wow, I'm not this great guy. So then I confessed to the other girl. I might as well get it over with and get off my chest. And she said, "I forgive you." And I was like, "What?" I said, "Why?" She said, Jesus has forgiven me for everything I've done in my life. So I don't feel like I should hold this against you. I was blown away. I said, "Tell me more about that." And she started explaining the gospel to me, which I had heard the information of the gospel before, but that was the first time that it was like, oh, this is for me. Like, I need a savior and I am not enough. And so that coincided very much with my collegiate experience. I graduated from high school that summer, put my faith in Christ. And then I'm a freshman at an elite Ivy League secular university that was aggressively secular, that was challenging, this aspect and notion of faith. And I didn't have the answers. I kind of put God on what was like a, a 30-day Netflix trial. You know what I mean? When you sign up, you're like, I'm going to check this out, but I'm probably going to cancel after a minute. And what ended up happening was, like, I found that God's answers were better than our questions. And when I started to get exposure to community, started to get exposure to discipleship, started to get exposure to, like, a biblical worldview, it helped me to anchor my perspective and gave me a compass for which to live my life. And I remember thinking in college, man, I had to go through a lot of this and figure some of this stuff out by myself. I don't want anybody else to go through that. And so I'm like, I want there to be somebody that if a young person is looking and exploring and confused, that there was somebody in their life that went across their path that said, I can show you a better way. And so that's really what got me engaged in doing ministry among 20 somethings and in that age group, because that at that time period, like me, a lot of people are willing to question what they thought and what is true about the world, about themselves in a unique way. And I just felt like, man, that's such an energizing and fulfilling thing to be able to be part of that journey.
You know, wow, there's so much you included in your story. And one of the things that jumped out at me, you mentioned about being exposed to Malcolm X and when you were in the 10th grade. And I'm trying to think, was that around the same age, or it could have been for me the same time? Because people ask me, what were some of the books that made a difference in your life? And when I was growing up as a kid in the projects in Miami, I remember now, I was actually younger than the 10th grade, because I was in the 7th grade at times. So that means I had to be about 12. And a teacher recommended I read Malcolm X, and the book, it was just amazing, his autobiography. But my question to you, and even with that, before you met this young lady, that is, because you found Christ shortly after that. But typically when people read Malcolm X's autobiography, they don't make the leap to Christianity right after that. So I'm thinking, am I missing something? What happened that got you?
That's a great question, especially in light of my story. My parents literally were in the Nation of Islam.
Exactly.
So you would have thought that was like the set off. Like,
so I'm thinking, am I missing something, Russell, that you're not telling me? What happened? How'd you make bridge the gap?
I mean, and the book is in some ways, a pamphlet, for Islam. And so I remember reading and being like, this man's socio-political analysis is on point, is sharp. But even in spite of my background and in spite of his own convictions, the spiritual piece just didn't ring true to me. It wasn't something that I felt like I have to believe and absorb all of these things. And some of that, at this point I was pretty much a secular skeptic maybe. But what happened my senior year was that Malcolm X helped stimulate my mind. But that moment is when God challenged my heart. And it was like, you need me. You need me. Like, not just to kind of have good ideas or do good things in the world, but holistically, you are unable on your own to figure out what's right, let alone to do it. You know what I mean? And that was the scenario, because while I was in my player mode, I was justifying it to myself. You know what I mean? Well, I'm not hurting anybody, or, you know what I mean? Like, different things. The Christian girl, she was very chaste and was saving herself to marriage. The other girl, that wasn't really her, testimony. And so it was like, hey, this is cool. And I was in, school so I just had all these justifications. And then God just broke through the justifications and said, here's my standard of righteousness. You're not meeting it. And so what makes you think you're good with me? And that's what really caused me to realize, oh, and then it was like Jesus. I was just as surprised as you. Like, Jesus? Really? Jesus? You know what I mean? But it was like, yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, because that just stood out to me. But I'm looking at you, because looking at where you came from and where you started, and I'm sorry we're spending so much time on your backstory, but I tend to let the Holy Spirit kind of lead us in the discussion, because God knows why he set things up. And I may have an agenda or a plan, but God has a better plan. And I'm always drawn to certain things, aspects of people's story. And you said that your parents broke up when you were 2 years old, and your dad, he was murdered when you were six years old. And my dad had left when I was 2 years old, but he didn't get murdered. But I know how traumatic. I grew up in a neighborhood where a lot of kids lost their fathers to violence and everything. But my question to you is, what impact, because we're hearing the good side of it is how, you know, even though you got yourself in a bad situation with these two girls, but it's actually, you can see God's fingerprint on that too, to kind of lead you to him. But what do you think it costs you as a young person, since we're talking about young people, how did that affect you, you think, now looking backwards?
Yeah.
How did that affect you as a young man growing up?
I wouldn't even say just looking backwards. I still, in the present, as a father myself, it still haunts, I think. But especially as a very young person, the first thing was a sense of abandonment. Like, was I enough? Why didn't he want me enough to stick around? I have an older brother who actually has his same name. He's my older brother's the third. And he lived with them for a couple of years. So that wasn't just like even a vague sense where I was the only one. Like, I felt like there was almost like he chose to be more connected to him than it was me. And I didn't. And so that sense of abandonment, a sense of rejection, became a theme for my life in terms of things, something I struggled with is being rejected by people. Another thing was uncertainty about who I was, and, you know, being a man, and like, what did that mean? And what did that look like? And having to kind of figure it out on my own. And it helped it, for a while. I struggled with connecting with men in a very real way, because I just didn't have the same sense of confidence or awareness or even sense of feeling included. In that process, I was around a lot of women, my mom, my aunt, my grandparent, my grandmother raised me in many ways. And so those were things that I had to search for and realize I needed to be intentional about. And it was really when I was in college and was connecting with different people. One group in particular was a Christian rap group called The Cross Movement that were also from Philly. And that was like the first time that I really connected with a bunch of men that just like, they told me about myself. They challenged me at different points. They affirmed me at different points. And that was like such a turning point in terms of helping me see myself in a healthier way. But that's still something that I feel like I'm working to grasp more of a sense of that full sense of who God made me to be, and to walk in that with authority.
You know, isn't it kind of strange? I hate to say funny, because it's not really funny, is that how we never realize how much we're impacted as youth until we get older by some of the things that we think, okay, well, that wasn't that big of a deal. Cause I know I try to minimize it. Oh, I didn't need a dad. It wasn't that important. Until you get older and you realize that a lot of your issues that you currently struggle with today stem from the feelings of abandonment, like you said, feelings of rejection. And it's funny, even though we're in two different parts of the country growing up, I went through the exact same thing and I felt the same thing, man. Was I not good enough? Why did he reject us? And what you later realized that it really had nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with them and what they're going through and what they're dealing with at the time. Because now you said, how many kids do you have, Russell?
I have one daughter.
Okay. Yeah. Because when you become a parent, you realize now that a lot of things that when your daughter gets older and you see them, you realize they're struggling with some issues, and then they start personalizing. You're thinking, oh, that's not how I feel. That's not what I think, but they're taking it that way. And so it's always humbling to see the importance of our role as parents. All right, so tell me this a little bit about this In Pursuit of Jesus project. What inspired that? Tell us more about
that. Oh, man, it was an incredible once in a lifetime experience. May hopefully more than once, but definitely once. So essentially, our Daily Bread Ministries reached out to me to do this project, where it would essentially kind of answer the question of like, how would someone's perspective of who Jesus is be shaped or changed by engaging with people from all over the world? Sometimes you hear people say, well, you're only a Christian because you grew up in a Christian country or you grew up in the States, right? So it's like, well, let's go to places where that wasn't the norm. And a place like Singapore or a place like Sweden, which is the most secular nation in the world. Singapore is the most religiously diverse nation in the world. Let's go to these different places. It's like Israel, where Christians are in a minority, and see how do people encounter who Jesus is. And so we went to five different countries on five continents, and in a pursuit of Jesus, of asking people who they saw Jesus to be and how did Jesus intersect with their culture? And that was one of the biggest things that we kind of discovered, was that based on someone's cultural paradigm and framework, it gives them a different facet, not contradictory, but almost like a diamond has different facets. And depending on which angle that you shine it in the light, it'll give you a different perspective of its brilliance. And that's kind of what happens when we encounter with people all over the world who see Jesus in different ways. We see him in more deep and rich ways than we could have ever have done simply by looking at it from our own cultural lens only.
And how long was this time frame that you did this coming?
Yeah, so this was this was from last May, so May 2019, through we traveled to about September 2019. So it was a very compressed schedule because I'm in seminary right now. So once the fall hit, I needed to get back to class. But in that time, I mean, you know, we hit up 5 continents in 5 months.
And so, Russell, tell me, how have you experienced Jesus then in a new way since filming this docuseries?
Yeah, it really opened my eyes. I think Argentina, that episode, we went to Argentina and explored this aspect of Jesus as a liberator. You hear this word liberator much in Argentina, and it's because their identity as a people is very much framed from the key moments in their history of liberating themselves from Spanish rule, and then liberating themselves from, or being liberated from, oppressive rule. Like, there was a terrible dark history in the 80s and 70s where the government rounded up over 30,000 dissidents over that span of about 5 or 6 years, and just they disappeared. They snatched people. They claimed that they didn't know where the people were, and they killed them or they sent them away. And it was a dark period, but it was one that caused the mothers and the women actually to demand justice for those people. And in the midst of that moment, it sparked a revival. Once freedom came, people wanted the freedom to see Jesus in that way. And so they see him very clearly as a liberator. So the church over there is very active in meeting the needs of people and in profound ways. But so that's one thing. But the other thing is their culture is very communal. You know, it's a kind of this, so you sit down and the table is very important. And I remember sitting and eating with some Argentines, and the one guy said, you know, he was a pastor, and he said, communion isn't just something that happens, you know, once a month on a Sunday. This is communion, when we sit and we consecrate this food and we eat with each other, and we recognize that as we draw closer to each other, we draw closer to Christ. And I'd never thought of that before as a meal, was sitting with people as a sacred experience that drew us closer to God. So that was just something that I took with me, you know, after that encounter.
You know, and I'm thinking now, because you are a teaching online pastor at the Bridge Church in Brooklyn, New York. Now, based on what you've learned and what you were exposed to, have you been able, or are you incorporating some of those teachings into your church? And if so, how are you doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that experience gave me was just a more global perspective on our faith. You know, when you start to realize, like, here you hear the phrase, you know, like white man's religion or white evangelicalism and things like that. And then you realize globally, Christians only make up like 3% of the church. Like, it's the world is much bigger than that. And the issues that we find all over the world are much broader than that. And so that helped me to bring in aspects of the global church and perspectives and stories. So I would tell those stories in my messages. But beyond that, that aspect of Jesus as a liberator and doing justice was something that especially has come up in recent times as we've seen the unrest in our cities and really these cries for justice in the streets, as we've seen people unjustly killed and murdered, you know, by law enforcement and things. And so, and just in all the other structural inequalities that exist, whether it's healthcare with COVID or education system, you mentioned education, the huge disparities that exist, which are incredible in a place like New York City. And so all of those things kind of enhance the perspective of when Jesus talked about the kingdom of God is at hand and I'm bringing the kingdom, that it meant, yes, that means a personal relationship with me, but it also means that I have something to say as Lord of the universe on each of these different issues. And I'm calling my church to live out what it means for the kingdom to come on earth as it is in heaven. And those were some insights that I got as I traveled specifically to Argentina and South Africa, where we also saw people engaging from the standpoint of apartheid.
Now, is this an isolated thing that they had you doing, or are you guys going to do this more, do some more of this?
I think that, you know, that kind of remains to be seen. Initially, it was a, you know, hey, we wanted to do this project and we'd like to invite you to be a part of it. But it kind of was a good relationship. And so from that, out came a podcast that we just launched last month. Called Where You're From. And so I'm a newbie in this role that you've been in for years now. And we're still telling the stories of people through the lens of faith in Christ and drawing out different elements of the different facets of that diamond that way. We have talked about potentially doing more in the future. And then, of course, COVID happened and kind of shut everything down. But who knows? I do think that we both have a mutual value for each other in terms of our daily bread and what they do and their reach and them for me. So I think that there'll be more to come.
Well, I hope so, because it sounds like a great project. Now, if they wanted, they can actually watch this. If they wanted to watch it, where could they go to watch this?
Yeah, I would say the simplest place is you can go to rasulberry.com, my website, and there you can get the podcast that we launched, Where You're From, as well as all the episodes of In Pursuit of Jesus, which are also on YouTube. And there were also about 25 different bonus videos, like small short videos. The episodes are about 25 minutes each, but the bonus footage are about like 3 minutes of different almost meditations on culture and faith. And those are all available on my website, as well as stuff that I've written as I've told the story about this experience and other messages and stuff that I've given. So rasulberry.com will give you all that.
Okay. And Russell, did you guys do this from the lens of we're going to use this as a tool to reach young people, or it was more of a bigger scale? What was the intention behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely a sense in which I think the church has struggled with engaging with Gen Z and millennials. You know, Pew Research and others, Barna, have come out with study after study that have shown that at the current rate, there's just so many people that are dropping out from church and whatnot. And so one of the reasons for that is just lack of engagement on the things where young people are, which is YouTube is the second most largest search engine to Google in the world. And so having a presence on YouTube is essential to be able to just reach people. So I commend you on you putting your podcast there as well. In addition, like just artistically well done, authentic stories. The cinematography and the production quality of this, I mean, it looks like something you would see on your TV on Netflix or something. It's beautiful shots. But also people want to engage and enter into other people's stories. And that's also something that we do a good job of listening to. So you get the story piece, you get beautiful art, you get a focus on faith and spirituality where people do have a lot of questions nowadays. And all of those things together, we are hoping to really target and connect with a younger demographic.
You know, now, Russell, I heard that the average age, and correct me if I'm wrong, the average age of your church's congregation is 26 years old.
Yes, that's true.
How are you guys reaching these young adults and standing firm on God's truth in our post-Christian culture that we're in right now?
Yeah, so we're a 6-year-old church plant and in New York City, in Brooklyn. And yeah, our average age is 26, you know, years old. And I think one of the things that we're doing, we have a strong focus on solid music that engages and connects with people where they are now, worship. That was always a point of emphasis. Another key thing is being flexible and adjusting to the time. So we were going through the Book of John as a sermon series. And then when the nation stood aghast as we saw what happened with George Floyd, The last two sermons, we made a pivot and started talking about what does God have to say to our, in light of this moment that we're in, what does he have to say? We started an organization called Pray, March, Act, which kind of combines the aspect of faith and justice and from a biblical standpoint. And so those are things that we're seeing as we've done those things, young people resonate and they connect with. But on a tangible technical level, we make sure our website is tight. We make sure that we are maximizing our search engine optimization so that we have about half the people that come to our church when we ask, how did you hear about us? Through Google. And really? They're Googling. People are like, we're good church. And we're, Christian church.
And most churches are not really good at SEO stuff.
Nah. And that's pretty impressive. You're missing. And then and investing resources, boosting and making sure our Instagram, because for young people, for anyone under, especially under the age of, let's say, 35, if they go to your website and your website looks like it was created in 2000 or 1995, you've lost credibility. You've lost them. They don't want to be a part. Like, they're done. And so you have to realize and invest in these processes and these approaches. And I think that more people have realized that when COVID happened, and now all of a sudden I got to put my whole church online and engage that way. So those are some strategies, but I think the main thing, the heart though, cause that'll get people in the door, but that won't keep them there.
Right. Right.
The main thing has been a sense of authenticity. That is our lead pastor, James T. Roberson III. He is super authentic, very real and vulnerable. And that is what young people are desiring more the most, not just slick imaging or, tech savvy stuff, but like really for people to get a window into who we are as people. And you'd be surprised how much they want mentors. They want older people. They want people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s to engage with them. But to do so in a way that's authentic, that will share with them, hey, this is what I experienced growing up. This is what I've learned. Like, but it will also listen to them and not just judge them like, oh yeah, your generation, I ain't got nothing, right. To say. And so that there's a balancing act there of wanting to speak truth, but to speak truth in love, as we're told in the book of Ephesians. And so that's kind of what we strike. And I think that's why people stay, because they feel like they can be heard. They can be responded to, that we're dealing with the issues of the day. I think justice, art, are two key values. Tech savvy is another one as well. And then investing in those things, because those don't happen overnight. It's not just a matter of, oh, well, I don't have anybody that can design a website. Pay somebody to design a website. Or I don't have anybody that is good at art. Get somebody who, and invest in it. And that will invest in your young people.
And a lot of this stuff is not that expensive either to do, with some of these templates and all these new websites popping up that pretty website makers that can give you that fresh modern look too. When you mentioned about missing, listening to this generation, and I wrote down in my notes here that if we can miss the young people when we're being dismissive of their thoughts and what they believe and what they think. My son and I just recently went to a rally they had for young people this past Saturday to find out what young people thought. Even though it was a lot of adults, they brought the kids there. The event was for the kids to just express what their thoughts about what's going on in our country. And Russell, it was heartbreaking to hear these kids. I'm talking about from as young as 8 years old, all the way up to college age students, of describing how they feel about what adults are doing in their response to what's going on with the racial injustices going on in our country. But it was very humbling to listen to them, and they just wanted to be heard. That's all they appreciated, the fact that a rally was called for them to be heard, because nobody's been listening to their thoughts about all of this. But Rasul, but let me ask you about this. What do you say to the older believers, the old heads like us? Mm-hmm. All right. the boomers and even the Gen Xers who believe the gospel is being compromised or somewhat watered down, because they're thinking it's all flash in the pan, it's entertainment now, to reach this younger generation. And they think it's not even biblical, that we're compromising biblical truth. You're a pastor, and you obviously have been effective in reaching, your church has been effective in reaching this generation. What's your response to them who say that we're watering down the gospel and we're compromising the truth?
Well, I mean, I think I'd start by saying that that it's a very real concern to sacrifice or to feel like, you know, you have to sacrifice the truth of the word in order to get people. And that is never something that people should do. That's never something that people should do. At the same time, I think the key question is, well, what does that actually mean and look like to do that, right? And is doing something different the same as watering something down? I think I'm a fan of history. And the interesting thing is there was debate centuries ago that we should only do church in Latin because that was the way that it was always done.
Good right? gracious.
You know, like that, I mean, the Catholic Church, they had their liturgies in Latin only. And that was a huge debate. And, you know, before the Reformation, that was the only church in town for the, you know, for about 1,000 years. And so that the controversy with them only stopped a few decades ago. But then if I'm a music head, right? What we consider gospel music today, if you go back to Thomas A. Dorsey, the father of gospel music, and Mahalia Jackson, they would kicking them out the churches because they was bringing that secular worldly music that was influenced because he was a blues man that got saved. And so he started bringing those melodies and that approach to gospel music, to what we now call gospel. It wasn't called that at the time. They were doing spirituals and hymns only. And so throughout time, you know, there have always been these controversies that have emerged and the sense of, well, are we, you know, watering things down to change it? And I think that the answer to that question is like, well, it's one thing. There's form and there's function. And I think as older folks, we have to realize that the form is always going to change. It's never going to stay the same. But the function, like the purpose, the point behind what am I doing, that should never, we have to keep that in place. Is the word being accurately taught and preached? Well, I can do that online. I can do that wearing jeans. I can do that wearing a t-shirt. I can do that wearing a blazer. That doesn't compromise anything. If I use a device, if I preach and I have, you know, my Bible on my iPad and I got my notes on my iPad and I bring that up, I'm not doing that to be trendy. I'm doing that because it's a more effective use of space, right? You know what I mean? And so, but are the words that I'm saying, are they being effective in reaching people? And I think that's a key thing that we have to challenge with, in the fact that it is always, I think, in the church, there's always a skepticism. I feel like as long as we're 10 or 15 years behind the world, folks feel comfortable where we are. But right. If we start to be too much in the same and keeping pace, then people get a little uncomfortable. But no, I think that there are times when people forsake the function in order to try to be hip or cool. And I think that's a problem. But at the same time, I think that there's a lot more space in that than what we oftentimes believe. So I would just encourage people to open up their minds about the different ways and the ways these strategies, social media and things like that, how many more people that you can reach. There was a church 2 Sundays ago that was trending on Twitter as like the U.S. worldwide Transformation Church was trending.
Transformation Church.
Right,
yeah.
Because the Pastor Todd gave this amazing fire message on relationships. And people resonated with it. It's such a great, I woke up in the morning, I'm like, why is this church trending? And it was all good stuff. Like, you never see that, you know, where it was just like, ooh, he's challenging me. That's him on Twitter, right? Like, is that a worldly thing? Is he watering down the message? No, he just has a team that sees and realizes this is where people are. So I need to go to those places.
You know, I think, and Michael Todd, he's a great person to bring up because I think a lot of churches would be using him as a case study, because, you know, he seems to come out, quote, out of nowhere, which we know that didn't happen. It didn't come out of nowhere, but he really knows what he's doing. He's true to his message. And like you say, he's authentic. There's people who may not like his style, but he's not changing his style to be liked. He's going with what he knows, and he really is tapped into this next generation. You know, we got a few minutes before we jump into the man up questions, but I want to kind of get your expert opinion on this, Russell, since you are the expert on the show talking about reaching this next generation. In your humble opinion, based on your experience and what you're seeing, What do you think are some of the biggest obstacles in us reaching the next generation? Or I guess another way of putting it is, what do you hear them saying as, this is the reason why I'm not committing to pursuing this thing called Jesus Christ and Christianity or organized religion? What seems to be the obstacle stopping our young people that maybe we're contributing to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that I've studied this, I've read about this. In the book, You Lost Me, by David Kinnaman, he actually, that's what it is. Like, he asked the question, why are young people leaving the church in numbers? And he lists about seven different reasons. One, he talks about hypocrisy is probably the number one thing in the church. And again, hypocrisy is probably the opposite of authenticity. So the sense where young people are tired of people saying, essentially, do what I say, not as I do, right? So that's a key one. Another one is being anti-science. People view the church as opposed to, so, you know, they're reading in school. And I think the evolution controversy and issue has spilled into an overall maybe distrust or even disdain for inquiry in those areas of education. And young people are feel like, okay, so you're basically telling me I either need to check my brain at the door or I'm not welcome here with my questions, which is the third thing, I can't question. There's no space for doubt. And I think that that's one of the key things. And this is a generational shift that exists. Where, you know, in previous generations, there was a high, heavy value on authority and responding to authority in order to be considered appropriate and acceptable. And I think communication is a perfect example of this. We grew up where there was, if you're old enough, you remember there was like five channels, right? Or three channels. And you had that and you had the newspaper. So if you wanted to be informed, you had these big organizations, NBC, ABC, CBS.
Yeah, three news channels. Fox. Yeah, three news channels and the newspaper in your local city.
Exactly. And they had the authority to tell us what we should watch and what, you know, and what was on. Newspapers were the source of insight. Now, in the social media era, that's changed. Now, oftentimes, the newspapers are trying to keep up with what's trending online, and they're tracking hashtags and things like that. So, like Black Lives Matter or any other hashtag that's existed, that was something that came on social media, and then the newspapers or the media had to cover. But what it also means is that people are used to this. This is the key. This generation is used to being able to express themselves and being heard without having to pay their dues in order to express themselves and be heard. And so when we're from a generation where it's like, okay, you stay silent, you know, you be seen and not heard until you pay your dues, then we are naturally offended when someone feels like they have the right or they dare to kind of express themselves and challenge
or the question system, authority. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or challenge authority on their own. And I think that's a huge adjustment that people have to make of realizing, okay, this is a new reality. Social media ain't going nowhere. So we have a generation of people who are used to hearing their voice be heard. That's not always bad, but what it does mean is I have to approach things from a less didactic standpoint when I'm not just telling you this is what you should think, or I'm even being more patient and listening to your criticism. I have a 22-year-old, right? She's in college, and we just had this conversation a few days ago, and the realization that she didn't feel like she was able to express herself or felt like, you know, we were always ragging on her generation. And that's something we have to be very careful of because they're sensitive to that and feeling like, oh, millennials this and millennials that. And so I think it comes when they don't feel like they can be heard and they leave. And so I think those are some things. And then the last thing is being silent on social issues that are very much important. This generation is very committed to activism, is very committed to social causes. And so if we only stick to the playbook of what we've learned, and that Jesus is kind of privatized, this is about me and my relationship with God and not about social issues or justice, then we're going to lose them. If they see that we're speaking about those things, then they're like, oh, okay, this is something I could be a part of, because they fundamentally want to change what's broken in the world. And that is a good thing. Obviously, sometimes what it means to be about that can be up for debate or question or misdirected. But we have to speak with that in mind. And that sometimes means challenging some of the notions that we grew up with of what ministry is, you know, and expanding that. Not I'm still an evangelist. I'm still sharing my faith. I'm still talking to people about Jesus. But as I do that, I also have to see that Jesus cared for the needs of people's physical and spiritual needs. And I think that's something that this generation is absolutely committed to.
Now, Russell, this is some great stuff. Thanks for sharing those great points. Because as you're sharing those points, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of being a father. We're both fathers. And that also relates to how we connect with our kids the same way. The same reason why they're shunning the church could be also the same reason why they're shunning us and not listening to us as well, if we're not careful. So I'm looking at about hypocrisy, being anti-science, not giving them space for doubt and not being heard and being solid on social issues. We can take heed of that ourselves as parents to stay connected to this generation, because they are going to have their own mindset of what they want to do. But just like the scriptures tells us, that if we train them up and not violating some of these things that you're outlining for us, that maybe that when they get old, they will not soon depart from it and they will return. You went off to college, you had your issues, your struggles, but look where you are right now. And the same thing with me. Same with me. So we don't stop what we're doing, but this is just a new way of doing things. And I love, and I go back and I'm summarizing this because we're getting ready to get into the man up questions, how you went back to form versus function. And I put down here practice versus purpose, that you may have changed the way you practice, but the purpose, you don't have to deviate from the purpose. So, man, thank you for sharing some great insights. But Rasul, now it's time for our man up questions, man. Are you ready, man? They're just five quick questions, starting with the letters M-A-N-U-P, and all they require is your fearless honesty. Are you ready, man?
I'm ready.
All right. And guys, we'll be right back with my guest, Rasul Berry, who's the teaching online pastor at the Bridge Church in Brooklyn, New York. And he's going to take on the man up questions after this short break. Let's face it, life is hard. You know what I mean. You want to win at work, but you're struggling to survive at home. You want to make your wife happy, but you have your own personal demons you have to battle with every single day. Trying to provide for your family financially, and at the same time, not knowing exactly how to protect and lead them spiritually. But do you know the only thing that's harder than trying to succeed as a man? Is when you're trying to do it alone. That's why at Real Men Connect, we're offering to do life with you. We have a unique and private program called the Real Men 300 that's designed to help you win at what matters most to you, like having a personal relationship with God, having a stronger marriage, leading your family well, winning and living your God-given purpose at work, and leaving a legacy that will matter in eternity. In the Real Men 300, we promise you three things. One, you will never have to do life alone again. Two, you won't ever get left behind, no matter how much you're struggling. And three, not only will you learn how to win as a man, you'll learn how to lead other men to victory as well. Guaranteed. However, you can't just join the Real Men 300. You have to apply, because we screen every man, and space is limited in this private and exclusive brotherhood. So to find out more and to see if you qualify, just go to realmen300.com. Because life's not easy, but it can get better when you choose to do it together with men you can trust, who won't judge you, but will hold you accountable and encourage you as a man. So apply today at realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com. Welcome back, Mighty Warriors, with my guest, Rasul Berry, and he's ready to take on the man of questions. Rasul, we're going to start with the letter M, the letter M, and the M stands for mistake. Now, we're talking about targeting and hitting the younger generation and getting them exposed to Christ so they can end up building a relationship with Christ themselves. What do you think is the biggest mistake that you made, and even when you had a heart to reach young people, that you've made personally in reaching the next generation for Christ?
doing more talking and less listening. That was probably the biggest mistake. I think as I have, you know, grown as a leader, as a communicator, as a father, I've realized that asking questions is more powerful than giving statements and opinions. And that also means of losing the veneer of control. And I say veneer of control because I don't want to say we lose control because we never really had it.
Never had it in the first place. Right.
And so, yeah, that would be my thing, is asking more questions.
Now, and usually I don't ask follow-up questions to the man of questions, but I agree with you about asking more questions. Give us some questions that you think we should get in the habit of asking young people so to keep them engaged or at least to grab their attention. Any questions that you kind of go to?
Yeah, I think a great starter is just like, what are you thinking about today? What's on your mind? We talked about just what's going on in the world. What are you thinking about what's going on in the world? How are you feeling? Those are just questions of just starting from the starting place of inviting them to reflect. And sometimes that actually trains them, because oftentimes this generation is very much, they're used to nonstop entertainment. And so they're not even used to necessarily exploring their inner thoughts. And so it might take some time for them to even know what they're thinking and feeling. But yeah, what's on your mind? What are you thinking about? What do you think about this?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, don't you think we also need to resist the urge when they're telling us what they're thinking about, not to correct them? Though that thinking is wrong. You know, no, you shouldn't be thinking that, or you shouldn't be feeling that. No, yeah. I think that's a recipe for disaster. You have to allow them to be able to express and have the freedom to disagree with them. And just because really, it's not about you trying to prove your point. It's trying to get their viewpoint and their opinion and what they think.
This is a great test that I use with that. How can I count? Can I remember the last time I walked away from a conversation with a young person like my daughter and she said something I disagree with and I didn't volunteer or try to correct her?
Yeah.
Can I remember the last time that I did that?
That's good.
Because if I can't, that means I need to. Right.
That's good, Russell. I like that. Yeah. And I've been testing myself on that because it usually happens with my daughter. I have a daughter who's just getting ready to turn 18 soon. And I have a son who's 24, but typically that's my test, is her. Is if I don't correct her, if I don't, because a lot of this stuff is not life or death. It's just their opinion.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I like that. Can I remember the last time I did it? That's good, Russell. I like that, man. Now let's go to the A. Now the A stands for attitude. If you could change one attitude in us as men when it comes to dealing with the younger generation, or even in the church per se, when it comes to leadership dealing with young people, what would it be, the attitude you would change in us?
If there's one attitude I think we could change, it's the one that kind of says that they're not ready. That they're not ready to have the hard conversations. They're not ready to step up and lead in different ways. I think it's kind of like, I think about riding a bike, right? Like my first bike had training wheels. You know what I mean? And it's like, it was good that I was on a bike and I had the training wheels. And then when we took the training wheels off, I fell a few times, but I got back up on the bike and I eventually learned how to ride a bike, and I still do. And I love riding bikes now. I think sometimes in organizational spaces and definitely in church spaces, we hold off from giving them the opportunity to really step up and lead. And I think as long as we can engage with them and, you know, model for them what to do, give them opportunity to do it while we're present, give them feedback about it, we realize they're ready. They're ready to step in and they want to, but if we don't give them those opportunities, they'll move on to a place that will.
You know, that's great advice. You know, and I want to, the next question is in. And you're doing a lot of great things and you guys have a lot of success with young people, but I would like to know, if you could, and there was no chance that you could fail, what's the next big thing you would attempt to do for God if you couldn't fail with this next generation? What would you like to do for them if you couldn't fail?
I think, I think about this Pray, March, Act thing that we're doing is to invite them to help us as the church continue to be on the forefront of what it means to speak to social issues in the world, and to give them space to imagine
new possibilities, new ministries, and to actually do it. So, yeah, it would be, okay, we're in this incredibly intense moment. And the funny thing is, in a lot of ways, we saw this happen with COVID because a lot of us had to use the young people and their expertise technologically to figure out how to do church online.
Right, right.
And, you know, and I'm Gen X, but I'm still like sometimes bringing my daughter along, like, okay, now how do I do this on Facebook? You know, so I would challenge them to continue to help push us forward.
You know, and I like that too, that we get this, have a vision of including them in as we move forward into their response, getting their input, getting their insights, their take on certain things, as opposed to saying we're going to make these decisions for them and they just have to come along with us. I like that. Now let's get to the U, Rasul. The U represents understand. What do you understand better now, working with the younger generation, that you didn't understand before, but you understand better now?
I think it would go back to the sense I felt like they didn't have respect for an older generation, and that was why they thought that they knew it all. And that's why they wanted to speak on everything. I think I understand better that they desire presence, they desire support, they desire insight, but they also want to, they're just used to processing and expressing themselves. And they're used to expressing themselves much more directly and much more passionately, sometimes irreverently, than what we were used to. But that doesn't mean that there's a lack of respect. It just means that you know, they've just grown up in an age where that's become the norm for them. And I think having a conversation about that, because sometimes it can go off the side and you got to bring people back, like, you know, I'm still your father, I'm still a person of authority, you know, that needs respect. But I am less likely to assume. I think in the beginning, it was like when I saw or experienced something like that, first thing on my mind was, oh, yeah, being disrespectful.
Didn't be disrespectful to me.
Yeah. Right. Now I'm like, that's not necessarily the case. Let me explore this some more. I think I have to give more space for expression.
You know, and I think that's been a hard transition for a lot of us as parents, because you said it earlier in the interview too, about they haven't paid their dues. You know, they don't, quote, have the right. But yeah, you're right. I would actually agree with you. I've learned to do that too, that I don't just jump to the conclusion that they're being disrespectful. And it's so funny. You ever had your parents or your, I don't know, if is your mom still alive, Rasul?
Yes.
But to see them around you when you're dealing with your kids, and then they hear your kids say something, you're like, I know she didn't just say something. You know, you could never. And you got to let them understand that you've evolved.
Yes. <Yep. laughs>
That no, mom, they're not being disrespectful. You have to understand, because to their, our parents, they don't have, they're like, I can't believe you allow your child to question you on that or to ask you about that, because we weren't allowed to ask why. I mean, my mom would have a conniption if you ask her why. She's, what? You don't even ask that question. So I think that's great. I would agree with you on that. That's been a transition I've had to make too. Now here's the last one. We'll let you out of here with this one, Rasul. The last letter is for P, and it's P stands for problem. Even though you've had this success, your church has had this success in reaching this next generation, what problem do you still struggle with in reaching younger people now? And you can even put your daughter in the context of that. What problem do you still struggle with this younger generation?
I think one thing is helping them deal with conflict and actually resolving conflict, either with, especially with people in a position of authority, like me as a pastor, or even among themselves. And again, this is where the, I think, I remember the first time I heard one of the young people I was leading tell me about that somebody broke up with them via text message. And I was like, what? That, you know, like, oh yeah, or on Facebook. You know, somebody sees their relationship status change, and that's how they found out.
Right.
And I couldn't believe it. And then I started to think about the fact that people will always take the path of least resistance. And so we didn't have that option growing up, but now people do. And so all of these like screens and texting can create a scenario when people are not as used to going through the hard things. The other side of that is experiencing rejection themselves, right? So we were talking to our young guys, because some of our young women was talking about at the church, like, yeah, so we went out for coffee. And then he was telling everybody that we went on a date, but he never asked me about going on a date. And this was like a thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, these guys say, hey, we're going out with some friends. And then none of the friends show up and it's just the two of them. And then talks about being on a date. And it's because they have grown up in a world where they don't have to experience confrontation. And so helping them model and to continue to teach, hey, this is healthy. Confrontation is not bad. Conflict is not bad. You just have to learn how to do it. And we need to do it because it can avoid things from getting much worse. That is still a challenge because that's just the world in which they live, where you cancel culture, you just cancel people, you just move on. And it's like, how do we help people to see in a church context and from a Christian standpoint, somebody says something or does something wrong, you don't just cancel them. You try to work with them. You try to bear up each other's burdens, as Galatians 6, 1 tells us, and so fulfill the law of Christ.
You know, I tell you, what you're showing us that this is always going to be a challenge, and we had to be flexible. We had to be fluid and be able to adapt to young people. We can't just write them off, and we can't just say, oh, they're going to be young people, going to be young people, because we've been in that position where we felt the same way about authority when we were growing up and what we were dealing with. And so I think we're doing a pretty decent job, maybe because we're in it more than the average person is, and we have to deal with the younger generation. But I'm thinking there's people like you who are getting the word out there and sharing what you guys are doing that's working. But thank you so much for answering those man-up questions. You did a great job, Rasul. Thanks for being honest with us and open with us. And guess what, Rasul? We've reached the end of our show. And man, don't you worry. We'll be back to do it again next week with a new guest and new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. But I'd like to thank my guest, Rasul Berry, for joining us today, for being so gracious with his time. Thank you so much, Rasul, for joining us, man.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And Rasul, quickly for our listeners, if they wanted to find out more about you, your ministry, we even gave them, we mentioned earlier about them watching In Pursuit of Jesus as a way they can go to your website. But is that the best way for them to contact you? And if so, give them that information again. What's the best way for them to reach out to you?
In addition to rasulberry.com, that's RASOOLB as in boy, ERRY.com. I'm also very active on Twitter, Facebook. Twitter handle, Facebook is all same first and last name, Rasul Berry. So you can also reach me that way, or just by submitting a message to contact me via my email, my website, rasulberry.com.
And Rasul, what we'll do is we'll make sure we include that in the show notes as well. So again, thank you for joining us on the show. And guys, do us a quick favor. This is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. Guys, you've made us the number one podcast for Christian men on iTunes. We couldn't have done it without your support. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God has called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.